Hello, this is Mary. I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Tuesday, August 4th, 2026. From the front page of the paper, The Bright Side, Garden Grows, Gives Back More. Now with 5 acres, Mercy Gardens aims to branch out to new partners, by Danette Beckett. Decatur. Last year, Good Samaritan Inn's Mercy Gardens expanded from 1/10 of an acre to 5 acres, and it's still growing. The agency acquired the large plot of land north of Good Samaritan Inn on North Union Street, then began the process of preparing a garden fit to feed a community. The gardens have been able to fulfill the needs of the Good Samaritan Inn noon meal programs, the chefs and others, said Tanya Melendez, executive director for the Good Samaritan Inn. So this has enabled us to donate more food to the partner pantries, she said. This produce will literally go to the community. Isabel Frazier, 15, spends 3 days a week working in the gardens. I harvest, I plant, I do just about whatever needs done right here, she said. I'm curing onions right now. The work can be interesting, Isabel said. It depends on who you work with and what tasks you're doing, because some jobs are harder than others, Isabel said. Good Samaritan Inn partners with Crossing Healthcare, providing 125 servings of 3 different items per week, according to Ben Frazier, program director and garden manager. In the past, Frazier has sent cherry tomatoes, cucumbers, and summer squash. The food is used for Crossing's prescription produce program for patients with various health challenges, such as diabetes, elevated BMI, and substance abuse disorders. Good Samaritan also partners with the Empowerment Opportunity Center, a community support agency. Good Samaritan sends approximately 140 servings of produce every day. They are using our produce as part of their senior meal program, Melendez said. Other agencies impacted by Mercy Gardens include Northeast Community Fund, Catholic Charities, and the Salvation Army. The rest of the community also has the opportunity to consume the Mercy Garden vegetables through the farmers market held on Saturday mornings at the Preston Jackson Park in downtown Decatur. Good Samaritan Inn's original garden on the north side of the building continues to be used, as well as the newer garden across the street. However, the satellite sites, located at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital and First Church of the Nazarenes D1 Naz, were consolidated to the new gardens. Mercy Gardens was funded through the help of various programs and grants, according to information from the Good Samaritan Board. In 2024, the Decatur City Council unanimously approved the transfer of the vacant block and a half of city-owned land to the nonprofit agency to enlarge the Mercy Gardens urban agriculture programs. The goal was to get into other places, Frazier said, about the partnership with other agencies and food pantries. And that is still the piece that we are trying to develop as well, Melendez said. We still have more land. The current gardens take up only part of the land available. Apple trees were recently planted. However, more fruits are on the wish list. The Good Samaritan Inn directors welcome community suggestions. A questionnaire is available on the Good Samaritan Inn website with a list of what the directors are able to grow. If we know what the community wants, we can plan better, Melendez said. A large Quonset hut-style structure has been beneficial since the gardens have expanded. It's a tent, Frazier said. Although the structure houses gardening equipment and tools, it still needs some work. It'll be real nice when the electrician is done and we have the refrigeration units up and running, Frazier said. The gardens continue to expand. A high tunnel garden used for tomatoes and cucumbers will be added to the lot across the street from the agency. There'll be another one standing right next to the first one, Frazier said. In addition to a pollinator garden, Melendez added. Isabel's father has had his daughter working in the gardens since she was a child. However, for those interested in learning about gardening, volunteering at Mercy Gardens is a great place to start, according to those working there. There's a lot of people to help you along the way as you get started, Isabel said. Also from the front page of the paper, elections. Judge blocks voter roll lawsuit. Trump administration denied access to Illinois' ballot data. By Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. A federal judge ruled late Friday that Illinois is not required to hand over its complete, unredacted voter registration data, including sensitive personal information, to the Trump administration. In a 14-page opinion, Judge Colleen Lawless reached the same conclusion as judges in 18 other federal districts and one appellate circuit who have ruled in nearly identical cases. She found that the Civil Rights Act of 1960 does not give the U.S. Attorney General general auditing power to demand voter data. No court has yet ruled in favor of the administration's demand for voter data. She also said the Department of Justice failed to provide any factual basis for suggesting state officials have done anything wrong in maintaining the state's voter registration database and that it offered no legitimate purpose for seeking the information. The Attorney General's demand is deficient in both its stated basis and purpose and cannot be enforced, against Illinois State Board of Elections Executive Director Bernadette Matthews, Lawless wrote. Demand for data. The Justice Department began demanding access to state's unredacted voter registration rolls shortly after President Donald Trump took office for a second term in 2025. The lists include sensitive personal information such as dates of birth, driver's license numbers, and partial Social Security numbers, which election law expert David Becker has referred to as the holy trinity of identity theft. In August of 2025, the State Elections Board gave the DOJ a copy of its statewide voter registration database with sensitive information redacted. That is the same information it makes available to candidate committees and political parties, but lawyers for DOJ said that was insufficient. In its petitions, DOJ said it needed the complete database to ascertain whether states were meeting their legal duties under federal laws to maintain accurate and up-to-date voter rolls and to take affirmative steps to purge the rolls of ineligible voters, including non-citizens. DOJ cited a provision of the Civil Rights Act giving the Attorney General authority to demand in writing from state election officials any record or paper related to an election that has taken place in the previous 22 months. But attorneys representing outside groups that intervened in the Illinois case argued that it was only a pretext and that DOJ's real purpose was to purge state voter rolls of suspected non-citizens by cross-checking their rolls with the National Citizenship Database. Court ruling. In her opinion, Lawless did not address that alternate theory about DOJ's motives. Instead, she focused on the agency's stated reasons. She said the Civil Rights Act did not give federal investigators blanket authority to demand records from state election officials, and that it requires them to show both a purpose and a basis for the demand. Lawyers for the Justice Department argued they met that obligation simply by citing the legal authority that the statute gives to demand the information, but Lawless rejected that argument. If the Attorney General could simply justify his demand with a statement of any purpose whatsoever, the requirement that he specify his purpose and his basis would be pointless, and it would provide him with unfettered authority to demand voting records, Lawless wrote. She said the Civil Rights Act of 1960 was enacted to combat racial discrimination in voting and that a demand for records under the law must relate to Congress's rationale behind granting the Attorney General investigatory authority over certain federal voting records. Congress did not confer a general auditing power to the DOJ over state election officials, she wrote. And also from the front page, technology. Pritzker okays law targeting social media. Illinois is curbing addictive algorithms, by Ben Zielinski, Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed sweeping regulations aimed at social media companies and cracking down on addictive algorithms that keep kids glued to their screens. House Bill 5511, known as the Children's Social Media Safety Act, imposes a series of requirements on social media companies and how they are to interact with users under 18 years old. The law, which will take effect in 2028, was one of Pritzker's top priorities during the spring legislative session and received unanimous support in both chambers. Big social media companies have intentionally designed their platforms to keep kids online for as long as possible, Pritzker said before signing the bill at an event in Chicago. Their algorithms learn what captures a child's attention, which most often seems to be anger and euphoria, and then the algorithm keeps feeding them more of it. Why? The almighty dollar. They feed our kids an unrealistic picture of life and sell them products and agendas to achieve it. Under the law, social media platforms must confirm a user's age through the device's operating system. When devices are set up for children, parents would set the child's age, which would automatically trigger certain restrictions required by the state. To limit the addictive nature of social media feeds, the law prohibits companies from using a minor's viewing history or data stored on the device to determine what shows up in their feeds. Instead, feeds for minors will only be allowed to show information the user requested or searched for, or was posted by a creator the user follows. Kids would also be able to see media that is a direct private message to them. These are common sense protections, Pritzker said. They don't prevent young people from connecting with one another or their loved ones online. They don't censor anyone. They take decisions about children's online safety away from the companies and put it back into the hands of the parents. Stronger default privacy settings are also required for minors, including shielding a minor's precise location and limiting digital currency transactions. Social media sites and apps would also be prohibited from sending notifications to minors between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. What we're seeing is shrinking attention spans, rising depression rates, and in kids, sacrificing sleep to scroll long past when they should be asleep is a real danger. House Bill sponsor Representative Jennifer Gong Gershowitz, Democrat Glenview, said. The Illinois Attorney General's office would enforce the law. Violators would be liable for fines up to $2,500 for each child for unintentional violations and up to $7,500 per child for intentional violations. It is important that we balance the guardrails that keep young people safe, guardrails that technology companies should have implemented from the very beginning, Attorney General Kwame Raoul said. Raoul has joined lawsuits against both Meta and TikTok, alleging the companies have addictive designs that exploit children. The law was generally opposed by tech companies. During testimony in committees this spring, lobbyists for the companies raised concerns that the bill would violate First Amendment rights and potentially trigger lawsuits against the state. The final version of the bill was opposed by the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, Motion Picture Association, Tech Company Advocacy Organization, TechNet, and the American Civil Liberties Union. Innovation and child safety are not competing interests, bill sponsor Senator Willie Preston, Democrat Chicago, said. You do not have to choose between technological progress and protecting children. The greatest innovations solve problems. They do not create them. Turning to page 3 of the August 4th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, public safety. Cops say girls at graveyard attacked. Minors tell police gunmen pointed weapon at them. By Tony Reed. Decatur. An angry confrontation in Decatur Cemetery over allegations of grave desecrations led to two girls being assaulted and threatened with a gun, police report. The incident happened Friday around 10 a.m. in Greenwood Cemetery. Two female juveniles under the age of 18 were there to visit the gravesite of a close friend of theirs, said Sergeant Adam Seifman with the Decatur Police Department. While they were there, another group of four older subjects, I shall refer to as the adult group, arrived at another gravesite, and the adult group confronted the juvenile group because they believed the juvenile group was disrespecting the gravesite that the adult group was visiting. One of the adult males in the adult group was questioning the juvenile females about disrespecting the gravesite by stomping on it and kicking over flowers. Seifman said the adult group claimed to have seen videos posted to social media that showed the desecration of the grave while it took place. Seifman said the confrontation between the two groups escalated, and as the two girls were heading toward their car to leave, they were attacked. An adult female, aged 18, hit one of the girls in the back of the head, and an adult male, aged 18, slapped the other girl in the face with an open hand, said Seifman. And another adult male was said to have pulled out a black handgun with an extended clip and pointed the gun at the girl's face. Seifman, speaking Sunday, said the 18-year-old female suspect has since been arrested and booked on a preliminary charge of battery as investigations into what happened continue. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the Office of the State's Attorney. After reviewing reports from the scene, Seifman said he didn't know if there was any connection between the two gravesites involved. Police have so far not been able to corroborate claims that a grave involved was desecrated. Youth's Ag Pictures Lauded. Illinois Treasurer honors students in Cream of the Crop contest. By Danette Beckett. Springfield. Two local students are winners in the 2026 Cream of the Crop Photography Contest, hosted by State Treasurer Michael Frericks. Carter Storm from Windsor placed first in the 11 to 14 age category. His photo was titled Cutting Wheat. Graham Cannon of Camargo placed second, also in the 11 to 14 age category, for a photo called Beginning to Sprout. The students have earned Bright Start scholarships. Their photos will also be displayed August 13th through 23rd at the Treasurer's Tent at the Illinois State Fair. More than 150 entries were submitted. The contest included three age groups, ages 8 to 10, 11 to 14, and 15 to 18. The first place winners received a $1,000 Bright Start 529 scholarship. Second place winners received a $500 scholarship, and third place winners received a $250 scholarship. The winning photos and other submissions will be featured in the 2026-27 Ag Invest calendar. These student photos truly reflect the beauty and diversity of Illinois agriculture, which is second to none, Frerick said in a news release announcing the winners. And both of the photos were printed in the paper. Carter Storm of Windsor placing first in the Cream of the Crop photography for a photo called Cutting Wheat. And it was taken standing in the wheat field as some sort of farm equipment is driving toward them to cut the wheat. Excuse my description of that, all farmers. And Graham Cannon of Camargo placed second in the category with his photo titled Beginning to Sprout, which shows a field with close-ups of two small sprouts that are just beginning to come out of the dirt. Turning to page 5, What's Happening? Ben Franklin Fest set for August 7th in Arcola. Arcola. The first Ben Franklin Fest will be held from 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. Friday, August 7th at Green Mill Village, 917 Green Mill Road in Arcola, as part of the community's celebration of America's 250th anniversary. The free event will feature family activities such as tethered hot air balloon rides, a foam dance party, and food trucks. The Arcola Lawn Rangers, who gained national attention performing precision maneuvers while pushing old lawnmowers, will lead a boot camp for the right to become an honorary lawn ranger and for the opportunity to for future lawn rangers to decorate their own mini mower. Big Al's Lemon Shakeups will attempt an American record for the most lemon shakeups sold from 5 to 8 p.m. For more information on the Ben Franklin Fest, visit the event's Facebook page. Open House to Eye Future Kaufman Plans. Decatur. Proposed plans for improvements to the Kaufman Lakeside Conservation Area will be on display during an open house from 5 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, August 11th. The event at the Rock Springs Nature Center, 3939 Nearing Lane in Decatur, will be hosted by the Macon County Conservation District. Kaufman Lakeside Conservation Area is located at 1604 South Shores Drive, with access to Basin 1 of Lake Decatur. The project's objectives are to create a new hiking trail, small parking lot, interpretive shelter, a pollinator garden, and a fishing pier. For more information, visit the Macon County Conservation District website. Learn how to run for office. Decatur. For those wanting to learn more about running for office, community volunteers will host a seminar from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Wednesday, August 12th at the Decatur Public Library. The free nonpartisan educational seminar will explain the process, featuring Macon County Clerk Josh Tanner as the primary presenter. The discussion will include the paperwork and signatures needed, where to file, and the dates it must be filed. Other topics will include basic requirements, such as residency, eligibility, and other details, as well as how to register to vote. We need citizens to regularly attend meetings, not just to complain, but to get informed, said Anne Owens, community volunteer and host of this event. I want to encourage people to know what is going on in local government. This seminar will also give us the opportunity to explain if you serve on the school board. You will be deciding and voting on nearly half of the property tax levy. For more information, call 217-791-1385. Stepping in MLK's footsteps. Advocates say work continues 60 years after the civil rights icon's historic Chicago March, by Lila Hempel Edgers, Chicago Tribune. The heavy rains that shuttered the third morning of Lollapalooza failed to dampen the crowds that marched toward Marquette Park on Saturday, retracing the very route the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. walked 60 years ago. While the violent mobs who hurled stones at marchers in 1966 are long gone, civil rights advocates say their demands remain strikingly familiar, and the threat to democracy had not disappeared. We're living in a time when human dignity is being dismissed, said Reverend Bernice King, the civil rights leader's youngest child, and in the midst of this trembling, we stand on the ground where my father once stood. King joined faith leaders and civil rights advocates from across the country to honor those who challenged housing segregation, racial injustice, and systemic equality decades ago. Together, they argued the anniversary was not only a remembrance of past victories, but a reminder that the work remains unfinished. Crowds began gathering at the intersection of 63rd and South Kedzie Avenue at around 9 a.m., 2 hours before stepping into the streets. huddled beneath colorful umbrellas. They cheered community leaders and sang songs of liberation. Many attended in protest of the immigration enforcement operations that have intensified as the Trump administration expanded its deportation campaign. Alejandra Villamogues, a McKinley Park resident, said repeated immigration raids in her neighborhoods have left families living in fear. "It's hard not to think about all that's going wrong," she said, "but I want to be hopeful, so I'm going to keep coming to things and getting inspired by the energy other people bring." Beth Wallace shared the same concerns, saying she had grown increasingly frustrated with the nation's leaders. The 72-year-old said she'll continue attending demonstrations for as long as that anger remains. "Racism is alive and well in Chicago," said Wallace, who lives in Western Springs. "God bless Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., but I'm so sorry we have to be marching in his footsteps still." As hundreds made their way through the streets, business owners stepped onto the sidewalk to cheer them on. Heads poked from windows outside along Kedzie Avenue, where residents applauded from their apartments. Flags sagged in the rain and translucent ponchos billowed in the wind, but the sound of bagpipes and a booming sousaphone kept the crowd moving. Showing up despite the weather was part of honoring King's legacy, said political commentator and television host Joy Reid, who traveled from Washington, D.C., to march with Chicagoans. "He didn't have the privilege of feeling as comfortable as you will feel today, even in the rain," said Reid, the first Black woman to anchor a primetime cable news program. "What we are trying to regrow in this country is a movement, so we are thankful to have a little water." Other speakers directly condemned President Trump and his administration for what they described as an ongoing assault on democracy. Mayor Brandon Johnson said Chicago would not yield to authoritarianism and pledged to continue investing in communities that have long been overlooked. More pain at pump likely. Exxon Chevron warned fuel prices likely to stay high amid war. From Reuters. Top U.S. oil producers ExxonMobil and Chevron warned that global supplies of diesel and other refined products likely will remain tight and lead to persistently high prices in the second half of the year as the Iran war continues to cause major energy disruptions. Both companies reported large jumps in second quarter refining profits Friday as declining fuel stockpiles combined with current curtailed exports from China and refinery outages in Russia led to higher margins. The rising margins and subsequent profits occurred as U.S. gasoline prices crossed $4 a gallon again last week, presenting a political challenge for President Trump and the Republican Party that will be campaigning to hold on to majorities in Congress in the November midterm elections. The big U.S. oil majors say they are doing everything they can to keep output high. Exxon CEO Darren Woods said it is critical that shipping resumes through the Strait of Hormuz to supply more crude to the market. "The utilization that we've seen can't be sustained for the long term, so I think this challenge is going to be with the world for a while," he said on CSNBC. Woods added that the company has the largest refining footprint in the world outside of China, and the disruption to crude supplies added difficulties to the downstream business. Exxon said scheduled maintenance would be lower during the third quarter compared with the previous 3 months. Exxon narrowly missed consensus estimates for second quarter earnings, while Chevron surpassed their earning expectations. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, August 4th, 2026. Please stay tuned.